Welcome to the Scuttlebutt Radio Program with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters, a show for veterans by veterans.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us on the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans, transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. You're on board with Tom Claxton and Cal Walters, both veterans of the United States Marine Corps, and we welcome you to the most important and entertaining show on the radio each week as we tackle the issues and concerns vital to the welfare of our nation's most neglected asset, the United States military veteran. And we are privileged to be broadcasting live today from the fantail of the battleship USS Alabama on beautiful Mobile Bay. We want to thank the folks here at the battleship for having us, and we've got an outstanding show coming up for you today. But first, I want to thank some of the sponsors that helped make the show possible. Right, Tom?
We certainly do. We'd like to thank the battleship USS Alabama Memorial Park, Viva Medicare of Alabama, the law firm of Gardberg and Kimberly, Ed's Seafood Shed, the official sponsor of Tom's Tirade, Serenity Funeral Home and Gardens, and Lifeline's Counseling Services, the Veteran 211 Hotline.
And, of course, thank you to all of our sponsors and you, our great listeners, because we could not do this without your support. So please let them know that you heard it on the Scuttlebutt. Of course, SBN is all about giving our veterans a voice on the issues that are important to them. So you can always join in the discussion at 343-0106 or 866-983-2777. Hey, check us out on the TuneIn app for your smartphone at FM Talk 106.5. Also, check us out on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter. It's at Cal_SBN. And if you like to listen on demand, our regularly aired shows are up via podcast on most of the major podcasting sites. And Tom's Tirade is up on CastBox.net to get your blood pressure going on demand. And we got a packed show coming up for you today. So you can always go to scuttlebuttnetwork.com for more information on the topics of the day. Later on SBN, we'll speak with the executive director of the battleship USS Alabama Memorial Park, General Janet Cobb. She'll get us up to speed on the happenings here at the battleship as they emerge from the pandemic. We'll also be joined by Ms. Jennifer Bird from the law firm of Gardberg and Kimberly. She will give us the latest on the legal issues facing our veterans. And, of course, Tom's Tirade on The Gun is Civilization, Part 2. It's a good one you don't want to miss. But first, it's a privilege to be joined on SBN by Mr. Nick DiMario from Ed's Seafood Shed. Nick, welcome back to the Scuttlebutt, and thank you for all that you do for our veterans, military, and our first responders. And thank you for the great chow that you brought over.
Absolutely. I appreciate you all having me here.
So, tell us what, you know, we're right here on the causeway, on the, you know, look from the battleship, we can see Ed's. Tell us about some of the great things that are going on over there.
Man, Ed's has just evolved. It's been a treat for the last 2 years since we acquired and bought it. You know, as of late, you know, Tom's been in there, and we've redone the bar area. We have a 31-foot bar, which the oyster bar will be put in next week, where you'll be able to sit on the glass and order what you want and watch them shuck it, and they'll tell you a little story about the different species that were ordered.
That is one of the neatest things. I know you've been talking about it. You and Pete both have been talking about it for a little while. But so it's almost like a boutique
oysters, and we'll still have our local oysters. And what's great about it is people eat with their eyes, and you know, the bar top, it was an old bowling alley top.
I'm bringing my ball, man. I want
you're bringing the ball.
Stripes,
we might throw some balls down there, but we're super excited. You know, just the general feel of what's happening in year 2.5 at Ed's has really turned the corner. It's an unbelievable facility. We've, you know, the outside's come alive where we've covered the bottom, and just the customers have been really, really, really great as far as receiving us, and I think that the food game has raised there. You know, we've got mahi, we've got the Causeway hot fish. I mean, everything's about the hot fish now over there. I brought you all some.
Ooh, yeah, you should have brought some
local catfish with a little hot fish sauce on there, which is our version of a Nashville hot, and then crab cakes that actually have crab.
And that's always nice.
That's unbelievable.
That aren't just bread.
That actually have crab meat.
You know, sometimes you go into a place, they got bread cakes. We got crab cakes.
Well, listen, you didn't bring any Dixie beer on draft, man.
Yeah, I didn't want to get in trouble. The general would have ran me off.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
My mom would have come back with some
waves.
But we're just having a great time with all of our brands and all of our restaurants, and we're trying to open up our Mobtown proper barbershop and the next hair men's location in Mobile and
salon.
Yeah,
salon.
Tom will be
not
there.
A damn barbershop.
It won't be a barbershop, but we'll have a juice bar in there and a coffee shop. But Ed's is doing
good.
Ed's is doing great.
I can go get coffee.
You're taken care of.
Yeah. The general's even talking about going over there with us. Yeah, she said, let's go.
So things are opening back up. I know you guys are taking all kinds of precautions. Tell us, you know, folks are a little bit uneasy about getting out. Tell us what kind of precautions you're taking.
One of the things is that we have a group of amazing employees on all of our restaurants. And we do a pre-meal. And, you know, as they're walking in the door, we're taking temperatures. Anybody that's over certain temperature, they got to go home, mask, gloves. We even created some sanitation boards, you know, that were provided by the government and different things that we've done. And we've really been really on top of following what they want us to. And I can tell by the customer flow, they feel safe. They're coming in. We're not packing them in, we're making them feel really good. And you know, the restaurant business is about feelings and hospitality, so it's just a little safer place. And we were already doing a lot of this anyway. That's part of our daily routine and process. So it's just heightened awareness and just being really on top of things.
And I also noticed, I was over there this past weekend, but you guys, I guess in the time that you were closed down, you did some improvements around there, even more than what you already had.
New floors, which turned out really nice, and then we extended that bar and added draft beer, and then the oyster station will be in this week where we'll actually put glass up there, and you'll sit there and say, I want two of these and two of these and two of these. And we'll be jumping off something called West Indies Claws, which will be a cold version of a West Indies crab claw. And then, you know, the dining rooms and, you know, everything we could get done in that small period of time, we tried to do.
And you got the ramp now that extends down.
Oh yeah,
the
you can get on the bottom of the deck, wheelchair ramp that goes down, and that was really cool. And then to the right where the sun comes, we're going to put a 20-foot wind sail that'll throw shade there as well. And you know, the kids' fun boss will come back. I think it's going to be my daughter, but we'll have some fun. And it's just been Ed's has been a really, really delight as far as getting to know the customers. Our work family there is amazing. You know, they all know Tom. Here comes Tom. Uh-oh.
Tom's in trouble.
And then, you know, Sunset Point, Squid Ink.
Panini Pete's.
Yeah. You know, all the managers, all of our team, our work family. We work together as one, and we are so happy to be back doing what we do, and we're doing it safely.
And on behalf of our veterans, we'd like to thank you and all of your employees at the Ed's Seafood Shed for the marvelous flags that you have flying now on the front of the building. It's we really appreciate that.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, the veteran support at Ed's in the 2 years that we have taken over has literally escalated on a weekly basis. Right. Yesterday, I counted at least 60 different veteran groups. Being a motorcycle group came in. They were all vets. I got pictures of them. It was awesome.
Right, it is, and we appreciate what you guys are doing too.
We appreciate y'all, man. You guys do a great job.
And so all your locations are open now.
We're open, and 50% seating, which there's plenty of room. You know, the great thing about all of our locations, we have open air seating. That means outside seating.
That's a new word for it.
Open air.
Open air seating.
I thought that one used to be outside.
Yeah.
It's still outside.
No, I said make it sound sexy. Yeah. Open air.
Open air.
Oh, yeah. What was it with Al Fresco?
Open air.
Anyway, well, Nick, we appreciate you being on board with
Absolutely.
Us. Thank you so much again for the great chow. And I'm probably going to make
you
my way
come
to
lunch. Yeah, I know you. I know you're going to be there afterwards.
Oh yeah.
Tom will be there holding court. He's usually either breakfast or dinner.
Thank you all so much for all that you do. They've got theme music when he comes in. I believe.
I'm gonna start breaking my old band.
Okay, you paid ASCAP fee.
No, there you go.
All right. Hey, on the other side of the break, General Janet Cobb with the battleship USS Alabama. All that and more when we return to the Scuttlebutt Network.
Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans.
ScuttlebuttNetwork.com. We are broadcasting live from the fantail of the battleship USS Alabama, and it is a beautiful day out on Mobile Bay, and we are absolutely privileged to be here, and it is an honor to be joined on SBN by the Executive Director of the Battleship USS Alabama Memorial Park, General Janet Cobb. General, thank you for joining us, and thank you for letting us hang out on the deck and not the brig.
Cal, good to have y'all back on the fantail of the USS Alabama. We can go see the brig, but we all need to avoid that, right, Tom?
No.
You spent too much time there.
My picture's on the wall there.
Great to have y'all back.
Well, you know, it is great to be back. The park is open, fully open now?
It is. We were closed for 8 weeks, completely closed for six. And after one of the temporary orders lifted, we were able to open the gift shop and the grounds. And we had a lot of people come in, but people are just flowing back into the park. We had just over 1,300 people here Saturday, just over 1,000 on Sunday.
Hoorah.
People are grateful to be coming in to observe the restrictions with COVID. We ask you to come in. If you have a fever, don't come in. But other than that, if you want to wear a mask, you can do so. Our frontline staff in the gift shop will have on a mask, gloves, as they deal with you. We're moving everybody through the front of the pavilion to get their tickets now rather than through the gift shop. You'll exit through the gift shop just to keep people spaced out. And it seems to be working very well. So the main thing I want to tell you is during that 6 weeks that we were completely closed, our staff came in and did an incredible amount of deferred maintenance, painting, scraping. We had a 19-year-old chisel. Our guys were down on the floor cleaning the decks, getting paint up, needle gunning the walls. There are so many areas of the ship below deck that are just pristine. They're gorgeous. Come see it.
Well, and one of the things you mentioned is, you know, this is a great place for you to bring the kids. Because it is open air. You know, there's plenty for the kids to do and be able to move around and enjoy the entire park.
You bet. And we've had a surge in our fishing pier activity. You know, you can come to Battleship Park. We ask that you pay $4 to come in. It is a parking fee, but, you know, we don't get any state or federal money for daily operations, so that helps us keep the park up. You can come lay out in the field, fly a kite, come out and fish, walk around, look at those monuments. If you want a tour, you can come in, buy a ticket, and do that, too. You can, you know, it's a great place. Kids are running around screaming. Adults are running around screaming, having fun. So it's a wide open, clean, fresh air, a beautiful view of Mobile Bay.
Outstanding. Well, I know you've got a big event coming up this weekend.
We do. The Living History crew comes back. They will not be berthing overnight, but their activities start at 8:30 on Saturday morning. They'll post the colors on the fantail. We're so glad to have them back. At 1 o'clock, the Yak Attack will take place. That's when we want everybody to be on deck. Visitors, remember, you need to come in through the pavilion now. Be on deck around, 1 o'clock. So the deck drills, the damage control drills, and eventually those aircraft will come peeling out of the sky. You'll have three 20-millimeter Oerlikon machine guns firing at them, one 40-millimeter Bofors gun. It's incredible. Everybody's screaming at that point. And the drum crew will be here this weekend. They will be here on Saturday manning the decks of submarine drum. SS-228. They will not be below deck because we want to funnel you through. It's kind of narrow down there. She's beautiful on the inside. People like to linger. But the Living History crew for the drum will be here, too. So it's a great weekend at Battleship Park.
So the drum is fully opened as well, right?
It is. Tom Bowser and Leslie Waters did great work doing additional restoration, some real fine painting and cleaning and metalwork during the period she was shut down. And we have a few areas roped off. The conning tower is closed. But other than that, you can go through, and she's just pristine on the inside.
And I know you have a lot of the what folks have probably grown accustomed to, the signage on the floor for social distancing.
We do.
All that.
We do. Our staff created most of the signs that you see now that we're doing. We've had some produced, and we just ask people to be observant of the social distance requirement, and people are doing so.
But let's say you have a family that's coming in. Now, can they travel through together as a group?
Absolutely, and people are doing that. You'll see 6, 8, 10 people together and another family behind them giving them their space. So, yeah, that's no problem at all.
Outstanding. Well, I mean, it sounds as though things have picked back up and are moving forward.
They have. We're very excited. We, frankly, lost a lot of revenue in those 8 weeks because spring break the last few years has been tremendous for us. Our fellow Americans in the Midwest who come in from Kansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, Texas, they just didn't come this year. Disneyland, Disney World, on the West Coast, Disney World and Florida closed. When Disney World reopens in July, it will really increase our traffic even more because Americans are going to travel because they're tired of being tied down.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
Everybody's going stir-crazy.
Us, too.
Yeah.
All of us are doing that.
Well, I understand that being shut down not only cut off your revenue stream, but it impacted some of the other programs that you have.
We did. We found that to be true. We had to close down our overnight adventure, which is our scouts, our JROTC groups. You just can't put those groups of young people. Some weekends you might have 300 kids down there with adults. There's no way that we can space them, even berthing them forward and aft. We're going to have to do that at a later time. A lot of our special events have canceled. So a lot of those things that you would normally see are not taking place. But we will, the Battleship Commission makes those decisions, and probably late this year we'll make a determination on when those groups will be able to come back aboard.
All right. And it also impacted your Operation Gratitude.
It did. When you come aboard and go down to the post office, it's completely restored as it would have been in World War II. Brown paper parcels tied with string, the stamps, airmail stamps from the 1940s. But we have a desk down there where the sailors would have written and addressed envelopes, and it's a form you would fill out. We collect it in our Operation Gratitude box, and we send those to military personnel around the world to thank them for their service. So don't forget to do that.
Great. And so that's open now. So the folks, as they come through,
yes,
they can go ahead, take a little bit of time. It's not going to affect the flow of traffic.
No, it does
so
not.
So they can go ahead and take some time
to
jot that little note and pass that on.
And one last bit of good news is that two bits of good news. The Korean War Memorial project has been bid. That company's been selected, and work will begin to repair and restore that memorial at the end. We'll have that done. And again, I'll remind everybody, the Korean War veterans that built that memorial, that raised the money for it, put up some money with the Battleship Foundation for major repairs, that work will actually be paid for by those Korean War veterans out of that fund. And just incredible when you think about
veterans,
it.
Our forgotten veterans.
That's right, our forgotten veterans. What a
Korean War.
Exactly. And the Teak Deck project is underway. We started this week with some initial walkthroughs with our engineering company. They'll be preparing bids to begin that work over the next couple of years, and we're very excited about that because we sure do need that deck replaced.
Are we going to be able to buy some of the old deck?
Probably so. It'll have to be looked at, planed, cleaned, and the commission definitely wants that to happen.
Oh, no, I want mine just like it is.
Yeah. Well, we won't clean it up too much, but some things have to be done to it, but certainly.
Oh, I understand.
Yeah, a lot of people want to make pins and a lot of items you can make out of that teak, and what a great keepsake for anybody that loves USS Alabama.
Outstanding. Well, one thing I've noticed, and I don't know if it's because of the fact that you're having folks go through the aircraft pavilion, but you have the aircraft that are lined up outside the pavilion are just, that's such an incredible display right as you come in.
It is. We had to actually, it was like a giant car wash. We brought Mike Thompson, who is our aircraft's exhibit manager, got the tug and pulled all our aircraft out. So if you looked out over a couple of days earlier this summer, he washed them all. It was a great sight. A lot of that. We rearranged, our curator, Shay McLean, worked with his team to rearrange the aircraft pavilion chronologically by the earliest through the Vietnam era.
Awesome.
So those aircraft, and we've got our World War One exhibit in there, which is tremendous. It's all done, and we had a couple of aircraft, of course, we had to move out. But people love it. More aircraft outside to photograph, to pose in front of. And it's right. Just, it's a nice backdrop because they're below the level of the drum. So right behind those aircraft, you see the World War II Hero submarine drum.
Outstanding. Well, where, if folks want more information, if they're listening and say, well, you know, what are your hours? Are they different? Where can folks go for more information?
Our hours in the summer are 8 to 5 o'clock. The last ticket is sold at 4 o'clock. You can go on our website, ussalabama.com, follow us on social media, and all that information will be there.
Outstanding. Well, General, we thank you so much for joining us.
Cal, good to see you. Tom as well. Marines.
She'll be taking you out when she leaves.
To the jail.
and again, to Panini Pete and those folks down at Ed's. What a great crew. Love seeing those service flags. And I'm serious, my father probably would have come out of his grave to get a draft Dixie beer.
Draft Dixie beer. What'd you say?
That's right.
General, thank you so much for being here. Thanks for
gentlemen,
having us and hosting
always
us.
Always a pleasure.
Hey, on the other side of the break, Ms. Jennifer Bird from the law firm of Gard, Berg, and Kimberly when we return to the Scuttlebutt.
Here they come, zooming to me, the thunder. Adam, boys, give her the gun. Down we die, spouting a flame from under. Up with one, hell of a roar. We live in fame, we'll go down in flame. Nothing will stop the U.S. Air Force. Sent it high into the blue. Hands of men busted the world asunder.
Hit a lick against what's wrong, or say a word for what's right, even though you get walloped for saying that word. Now, I may sound like a Bible beater yelling up a revival at a river crossing camp meeting, but that don't change the truth none. There's right and there's wrong. You gotta do one or the other. You do the one and you're living. You do the other and you may be walking around, but you're dead as a beaver hat.
It's Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans.
And welcome back, and thank you for joining us today on the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, a voice of the veterans for the veterans, transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. I'm Cal Walters, along with Tom Claxton. We're glad that you've joined us to discuss the issues facing our veterans today as we broadcast live from the fantail of the battleship USS Alabama on Mobile Bay. And you can always check out Facebook for more information. You can follow me on Twitter. It's at Cal_SBN, and I know we have some sponsors that we want to thank, right, Tom?
We certainly do. We'd like to thank the fine folks that continue to help make this show possible. The battleship USS Alabama Memorial Park, which we have the pleasure of being at today. Our sea lawyer, Colin Kimberly, and all the fine folks at the law firm of Gardberg and Kimberly. Viva Medicare of Alabama, Serenity Funeral Home and Gardens, and Lifeline's Counseling Services, the Veterans 211 Hotline.
And it is great to be joined by Ms. Jennifer Bird from the law firm of Gard, Berg, and Kimberly. Jennifer, welcome back to the Scuttlebutt, and thank you for all that you do for our veterans and their families.
Thanks for having me, Cal. You know, I like being with you guys and being able to give some information to our veterans.
Outstanding. Well, what's going on with the VA? I know, you know, COVID changed a lot of things. Are they starting to open up again?
They are slowly opening up. Unfortunately, not here on the Gulf Coast so far. I do know that the VA has begun scheduling CMPs, and for those that have disability claims, CMP is a compensation and pension examination, and those are the exams that are used by the VA to determine service connections and ratings for disabilities. and not everyone has to have an exam. The VA basically says that if they don't have enough information to decide a claim, then they'll do one of these exams.
So you may have a veteran in some instances that I'm dealing with them right now with my shoulder, which is a service-connected injury. And so if I'm going through the system and they're just taking a look at my shoulder to see what's wrong with it, so that might be able to take the place of for an additional exam.
It can, especially if you're seeing a civilian doctor outside of the VA and you have enough medical records to show what's going on.
Well, no, actually, it's the VA I'm going through the VA right now.
A lot of times that does help. If you have enough, especially if you, as in your case, you have the VA doctors and they can go in and look at those medical records that are existing, they may not necessarily need a CMP exam. A lot of times they schedule them anyway because they use third-party contractors and they want to have an outside opinion of what's going on. Mm. It's not necessary, is what the VA says. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a hit and miss of when they're going to schedule those or not. I do know that in the midst of all this COVID-19, they stopped all CMP exams. Let me change that. They stopped most CMPs. There were some very, very small circumstances where they allowed CMPs telephonically. It was a very small list. Most people did not qualify for that. But starting on May 28th, they did start the in-person CMPs. They're now up to about 23,000 zip codes. As I said before, unfortunately, that's not anywhere here on the Gulf Coast. Good news, the area is expanding every day, so hopefully they'll be here as soon as possible, because that does mean for those veterans that are waiting with their disability claims, they can get those CMP exams and their claim can start moving forward instead of being in this limbo they've been in.
But if they put in for that disability claim, regardless of how long it takes them to schedule that CMP, they still, that they're start date goes back to when they file the claim, correct?
Exactly. Effective date is from the time that you either file it or you filed an intent to file. So let's say you filed an intent to file a claim, and within a year you then file the actual claim. As long as it's within that one-year period, it goes from the day that you filed the intent to file. So, yes.
So what are some of the things that veterans can do in the meantime if they're waiting?
Keep a journal of your symptoms and the problems that you have going on. Make sure that you can be very clear when you do go for the CMP exam with everything that's going on with you, and that journal will help you to do that. But also, private medical records can be helpful if you are seeing doctors outside of the VA. Try to bring those medical records with you. They're not always going to look at them, but if you have them, it does help, and you can go ahead and submit those as well.
All right. So what about our VA National Cemeteries? I know a lot of that was kind of shut down for a period of time. Where do we stand on that?
It was shut down, and they were able to do direct internment, but then they were holding off on the memorial services. And starting June, well, it started June the 9th, they had started to allow in limited ways for cemeteries to do the committal and memorial services. So they are using all the things the Centers for Disease Control say. In other words, limiting the number of individuals, practicing social distancing, ensuring that the attendees and the employees all wear face coverings, use hand sanitizer, ask anyone who's been sick to stay at home, those kind of things. You know, if the families are worried, they can go ahead and do the direct interment like they've been doing it, and then opt to do a memorial service later. So what they're saying is that the memorial services for veterans and their eligible family members who are interred between March 23rd and June 8th are going to start in July. So that's a good plus for those people who've been waiting to lay their loved one to rest.
Absolutely. And you know, along with that, you know, one of the things that most people expect or when they go to one of those ceremonies is the presentation of that folded flag. And I know Flag Day was just June 14th.
Yeah, Sunday.
So I know you've got – I missed all the Flag Day barbecues and mattress sales.
Right.
You know, I don't know what happened. It just – you know, maybe it was the virus is what shut all that stuff
down. No, I think it's just most people didn't realize that Flag Day was Sunday.
That might be it.
You know, it's awful, I think, that people did not realize that Flag Day was Sunday. And then we're also coming up on 4th of July here. And this is a really great time for us to have a reminder about our flag and how to treat our flag with respect. And one of the things, and this was an something that I had heard about previously, but there was a really great article lately about what the folds mean in a flag. And you've all seen the triangle fold, especially at funerals. And this, if you don't know what those mean, go and look it up. I'm going to give a few examples. For instance, the first fold in the flag is a symbol of life. And the third fold, when you get to that third fold, it's the honor and remembrance of the veteran that's departing our ranks and who gave a portion of his or her life in defense of the country. These are things that most people do not realize about the flag. One of the most important folds for me is the fifth fold, because that fold is actually the tribute to our country. And Stephen Decatur has a quote, and it says, "Our country, in dealing with other countries, may she always be right, but is still our country, right or wrong?" And I think that that's something that's very important right now. This is our country, no matter if it's right or wrong, and we need to honor the flag that's the symbol of our country.
Absolutely.
You know, the other thing is that people often wonder, what do they do when the flag is all destroyed, especially if it's been hanging up for a while? Mm-hmm. They don't know how to get rid of their flag in a dignified way. I really hate to see people just throw a flag away. It's just not the way that you do it.
That should never be done.
No. So, and then people say, well, burning the flag is wrong, and it's, you know, desecration, a sign of rebellion. Actually, it's not. Throughout history, burning or the cremation of the flag was actually considered the dignified way of paying respect to the deceased and for that object of the flag. It's actually, when you retire a flag, that's one of the most ways that people use is by burning the flag. So a lot of people say, well, where can I take it? Is there somebody that does it? No, actually, anyone can retire a flag. The flag code doesn't authorize any particular group or organization. Anyone can do it. The thing is making sure that if you're doing that, it's in a solemn, dignified manner. You're not just going to cut it up and throw it on a fire. That's not the way that you do it. It's in honoring the flag, you honor it in a solemn, dignified manner.
Absolutely. And I know a lot of the veteran service organizations, you know, the
right.
various posts, they'll collect those flags.
Right. Even the Boy Scouts are doing it, too.
Right. Yeah. And at certain times of the year, they'll have the proper ceremonies.
Right.
So.
Well, and that's one of the reasons that I know about this, because Trail Life USA, that my dad has a troop on Dolphin Island with the boys, they do that every year, have a big ceremony where they retire the flag.
Absolutely. So. Well, Jennifer, we thank you so much for joining us. We're up against the break. Thank you for all the great information. And real quick, what's the phone number?
251-343-1111. You can check us out at garberglaw.com.
Outstanding. Jennifer, thank you again for joining us. On the other side of the break, Tom's tirade on The Gun is Civilization, Part 2.
Mr. Tom Claxton.
Now, as Paul Harvey used to say, is the rest of the story and a follow-up to my tirade on how the gun is civilization. But before I jump into that, let me give you a little background on the history of gun control. In 1929, the Soviet Union established gun control. And from 1929 to 1953, about 20 million Soviet descendants, unable to defend themselves, were rounded up and exterminated. In 1911, Turkey established gun control. From 1915 to 1917, 1.5 million Armenians, unable to defend themselves, were rounded up and exterminated. Germany established gun control in 1938, and from 1939 to 1945, a total of 13 million Jews and others who were unable to defend themselves were rounded up and exterminated. Communist China established gun control in 1935. From 1948 to 1952, 20 million political dissidents unable to defend themselves were rounded up and exterminated. Guatemala established gun control in 1964. From 1964 to 1981, 100,000 Maya Indians, unable to defend themselves, were rounded up and exterminated. Are you sensing a pattern here yet? Uganda established gun control in 1970. From 1971 to 1979, 300,000 Christians, unable to defend themselves, were rounded up and exterminated. Cambodia established gun control in 1956. From 1975 to 1977, 1 million educated people unable to defend themselves were rounded up and exterminated. The number of defenseless people rounded up and exterminated in the 20th century because of gun control, 56 million. Yes, 56 million. Just take a moment for that number to sink in. You wouldn't see this data on the U.S. Evening News or hear politicians disseminating this information. Compare that number to the estimates of the total killed in all the wars of the 20th century at only 35 million. And the gun control debate takes on an entirely different light. The next time someone talks in favor of gun control, please remind them of this history lesson. Take note, my fellow Americans, before it's too late. Guns in the hands of honest citizens save lives and property. Yes, gun control laws adversely affect only the law-abiding citizens. With guns, we are citizens. Without them, we are subjects. You got that? Subjects. I will remind you again that during World War II, the Japanese decided not to invade America because they knew most Americans were armed. Just a quick look at the other side of the coin. Switzerland issues every household a gun. Switzerland's government trains every adult that they issue a rifle. Switzerland has the lowest gun-related crime rate of any civilized country in the world. It's a no-brainer. Yet, somehow, President Obama's solution to just about every social ill in the U.S. is to draft more gun control legislation, which only restricts the rights of law-abiding citizens to protect themselves not only from the criminals, but also from the ever-encroaching federal government. Considering that we are now in a war of civilizations with the Islamic State and to its followers, the last thing that we need to do as a nation is to unilaterally disarm our populace. And this is a truism that cuts both ways. Anyone with a modicum of common sense can understand at this critical juncture in our nation's history, disarming our citizens and telegraphing that to our friends and enemies only invites more attacks within our country at a time when our government is already admitting that they cannot keep up with the pace at which Islamic terrorists are infiltrating our country. Combine this with the fact that the politically correct culture of which I spoke in my tirade, Who's to Blame, has made eunuchs out of once proud patriots, and you would potentially have a recipe for disaster and anarchy throughout our nation. As they say, power abhors a vacuum, and I fear that our enemies, both at home and abroad, would do everything in their power to exploit this situation, and that one of the first things to be destroyed would be our liberties, so dearly paid for by the blood and sweat of patriots through the decades. One can only imagine those who might attempt to fill this void. On the one hand, you have fanatical groups such as ISIS stepping in to rule with fundamentalist Sharia-type laws which subjugate women and non-believers. On the other hand, you have the ultra-nationalistic groups that will cling to a hardcore ideology largely built around hate and fear. However, both will promise peace and security for those who wish to conform. Remember, Hitler had the trains running on time. But of course, the payment for this is a sacrifice of one's individual freedom of thought, expression, and the liberty to enjoy it. As someone once put it, I would rather die free in fighting than live safely on my knees. And so, listeners, veterans, patriots, Americans, there is your choice. Freedom to live as you want with the individual responsibility and accountability that comes with it, or subjugation to an unyielding ideology at the end of a gun or knife. One is yours if you can keep it. The other will be yours if you cannot. And as for me, I choose liberty. For the Scuttlebutt Network, this is Tom Claxton.
Where's your drill sergeant, men?
Load up, sir!
Load up, sir! So am I to understand that you men completed your training on your own?
That's the fact, Jack!
These are exactly the kind of men I want working on the Scuttlebutt Network.
And welcome back to the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, a voice of the veterans for the veterans on 106.5 FM, streaming live at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. VivaTech.com. Along with Tom Claxton, I'm Cal Walters, a couple old Marines with just a little bit to say. The First Amendment right to say it and the fighting spirit to keep it. And, you know, Tom, some powerful stuff over the last couple of weeks with those tirades on the gun of civilization. Pull those out. I mean, the topic itself is really rather timeless, but I thought it was kind of appropriate in when you look at what's going on in our nation today. So a lot of good information in there. You know, another interesting thing that's been occurring, Tom, is, and I find it that a lot of these folks, especially you see pictures coming out of that cuckoo's nest in Seattle, and all the liberals that hate guns, they're now walking around on the streets of Seattle with guns.
With guns. Wonder why they would do that.
Well, either they want to protect themselves or they want to enforce their will on somebody else.
You know what one of my Marines said last night? We had a little meeting, and he said, you know what we need to do? We'll just put a fence around that. And since they're leaving this country and they're going to another country, what we'll do is we'll just fence all that in, and we'll have one gate that they need to come out of when they need to come out of there, and we'll check their passport.
There you go.
Yeah, we'll see if they got a good passport. You know, if not, then they won't be able to get in the country. They wanted to leave this country, so yeah, you know, let them go ahead and leave.
The story I pulled up, Tom, and it's sad, it's disturbing, but there was a man found dead in the stairway at a VA hospital campus a month after he went missing.
This is
the Bedford Veterans Hospital up in Massachusetts. I'll say that, not you, but it was a 62-year-old man who'd been missing for a month, who was found dead in a stairwell. Mm-hmm. He was apparently wearing the same clothes as when he went unaccounted for.
So he's been there the whole time.
Yeah. Apparently a fellow resident found the body. The cause of death is still pending. The hospital's run by the government. The housing units are operated by another group. But, you know, Tom, it's just one of those things where you've got to think, you know, if one of your residents turns up missing and it takes a month for somebody to even check the stairwells in some place like that.
Tells me they give up. They look a little bit and they give up and let it go. He walked out and left the building.
I
don't believe that's the way we were taught to reconnoiter and go out and check the area, make sure that we don't have a problem, you know.
Absolutely. And the thing about it is you've got to wonder, I mean, if they've got to have cameras in a facility like that, you've got to, nobody thought to look to see where the guy was last.
Speaks of lazy people, nobody takes the stairs.
Anyway. Yeah, and of course, without a cause of death, and you don't know if they're going to say it had to do with a virus, and that's why they couldn't look around. But that's going to bring us to the close of today's edition of the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, The Voice of the Veterans. For the veterans, we thank you for joining us, and we want to thank all the folks here at the Battleship for hosting us. We hope that you will join us again soon. Until then, please keep our warriors in your prayers, especially those in harm's way. God be with them and their families. God bless America. Remember, hero is not a four-letter word. We'll catch you on the other side.
Hurrah!